The state budget includes new language and funding to grow New York's housing stock and provide additional protections for renters. To discuss the ramifications of what was included, we're joined in the Capitol Press Room by State Senator Brian Kavanaugh, a Manhattan Democrat who chairs the Senate's Housing, Construction, and Community Development Committee. Welcome back to the program, Senator.
It's always great to be here.
So I want to start with the housing creation side of the budget, which includes tax incentives for housing in the five boroughs, converting commercial spaces, and even building 100% affordable apartments upstate. And there's also a pool of discretionary funds to encourage pro-growth communities. What are your expectations for this entire package when it's put together? For example, do you think it will promote the development of 800,000 new units over the next decade, which was the governor's goal back in 2023?
No, I think this is a very significant step forward, but it is not the end of our work to ensure that we're doing adequate production. The governor last year had proposed some of the things that ended up getting into this budget, which we'll talk about, but also some changes to the ability of localities, especially in the New York City metropolitan area, to regulate housing. And not much of that was included in this budget. So I think there'll be ongoing discussions of that. There's certainly additional capital spending and other things that are also going to be needed. But this is a big step forward. We've renewed some of these tax breaks in New York City that have been one of the core strategies to produce additional housing, especially additional affordable housing in New York. And we've got substantial new capital programs that are, again, primarily geared toward upstate. And I think the net of that is that we have put New York on a path toward producing more housing. But I don't think anybody has any clean numbers as to how many units will be produced as a result of these efforts, especially the tax breaks, because the rate at which housing is produced is very much dependent on the decisions of private parties that decide what to build.
Well, when you think about the tax incentives, and specifically in New York City, what are the improvements that you see in the government subsidies that are available compared to the tax incentive program that was allowed to lapse a few years ago?
The program is now called 485X. That's the provision of the state finance law that
rolls off your tongue.
Exactly. It's very catchy. But 485X is basically a renewal of something, as you note, had expired in June of 2022. And it is basically, it is a tax break, gives very long-term reductions in taxes, mostly zero taxes for long periods, in exchange for developers of housing, including substantial amounts of affordability. So, you know, the program needs to be designed for the market that, you know, you're working in at the time. We know that since 2022, when the last program expired, interest rates have gone up and, you know, some costs have gone up. So the program is designed to get the greatest benefit in terms of affordable housing and good jobs for people who both construct housing and work in the buildings, and of course affordability. And so we think it's, you know, it's got more affordability than the previous version. It's got permanent affordability. One of the defects of the prior program is that the affordability would expire sometimes, you know, decades hence. And, you know, that might have seemed like a reasonable thing to do at the time those buildings were being constructed or the program, you know, the program was being enacted. But one of the problems with that is that long-term, eventually those tax subsidies expire and the affordability expires and people are pushed out of their homes. So these benefits will be permanent. It's a complex set of requirements that have different geographic zones and different tax breaks and different durations. But there are some versions of this where a quarter of the building would be affordable at an average of 60% of the median income. And, you know, other versions where you'd get 80% average AMI. But that is construction that largely is not happening without very substantial subsidies. And in addition, the program addresses the fact that taxes in general on multifamily housing are very, very high in New York. And so one of the things that has become clear in the last couple of years is that the overall level of construction declined substantially without a program like this. So putting it back in place is an important step. It's been my primary goal to make sure we buy the affordability that's necessary if we're going to put a tax break like that in place. But part of the idea was to get a deal that included many other things that we were looking for, including funding for new construction and tenant protections and, you know, money for attorneys, for homeowners and legal service providers. So there's no aspect of this that was fully satisfactory to any one party, but I think the collective deal is good in many respects. And I think, it's, again, as I said before, a substantial step forward overall.
Well, you bring up a point about the deal not being necessarily completely satisfactory to any one party, and generally there's this rule of thumb that if everyone walks away from the table unhappy, that that represents a good compromise. Is compromise necessarily the best way to produce policy, though?
No, well, compromise is necessary to produce policy. I think that a better rubric is that, most interested parties are somewhat happy, but more important, rather than somewhat unhappy, but more importantly, I think we have, it is understandable that representatives of the real estate industry look out for their interests and, tenant representatives look out for their interests. I think it's our job to sort of balance that and get, something that benefits the overall public interest, both for the present public and into the future. And I think that this deal, although there were aspects of it that I would have preferred were much better from my perspective, I think it is overall a deal that will benefit, many, many thousands of New Yorkers and allow us to produce much more housing, which we desperately need. So I think overall it's a good deal. I think compromises in a state this complex and this large with such diverse, housing markets and, diverse needs, I think is necessary to get something done.
Well, before we move on, let me reintroduce you for listeners just joining us. This is the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with State Senator Brian Kavanaugh, a Manhattan Democrat who chairs his chamber's Committee on Housing, Construction, and Community Development. Well, sticking with the idea of compromise, the budget includes a pilot program for New York City-based seller apartments. This legislation, the language seems very limited in scope. So what are your expectations for this?
So I had proposed this is something that people became very focused on after Hurricane Ida ripped through New York and people died in their homes because of flooding. And, I think people became more aware of how many illegal cellar and basement apartments that there are in New York City. There are other places as well. But what we proposed, I proposed this as a bill of my own, was to create a program where the city of New York could, through local law, create a set of standards to make apartments legal and safe. But in order to do that, they would be permitted to provide amnesty for property owners who are willing to effectively come in and say, I'd like to make this legal and safe. And because they're effectively, all of these apartments are illegal at the moment. And also it would allow the city to, working with their own building department and fire department and others that are concerned about safety, it would allow them to make exceptions to otherwise applicable provisions of the state multiple dwelling law that would allow them to make physical changes and make the apartment safe. What we ended up with is largely what I just described. It will authorize all of that, but it is limited in geographic scope. It's limited to some community boards in New York City and not others. Again, the program I had proposed would have been citywide, but I think it is. I think this is, again, a very big step forward, because what it'll do is permit the city to create the program, and it'll permit them to fund it and begin to make the changes necessary to make apartments safe. And it's a pilot in the sense. I mean, it doesn't expire, but it's a pilot in the sense that it'll allow the city to demonstrate the concept. And the city of New York at times has estimated there may be as many as 50,000 of these apartments that are out there. Which, if that's true, it would be 2.5% of the entire rental housing stock of the city of New York. Housing, typical household size is more than two. So you're talking about housing, it's housing more than 100,000 people. As a practical matter, a program was never going to address that in a single year. So I think that the city can now do the important work of coming up with the standards and beginning the work of renovating and repairing these apartments and making them legal and safe. And hopefully what they'll do is demonstrate that concept, and people who have been skeptical of it will have their issues addressed by seeing a program actually on the ground. And, over time, I would hope we'd be able to expand it. But at this point, I think the city will be able to move forward with, as much resources as they're able to put into a program, because there's certainly plenty of apartments that would qualify for this kind of treatment under the new program. So, again, I think it's a win overall, although I would have gone further if it were up to me.
Well, you mentioned that your push is informed by the Hurricane Ida experience. So will communities that were impacted by the flooding be part of this pilot program?
I would say some of them will be, but, you don't. I would say Ida made people aware of just the scope of this problem. But, illegal basement and cellar apartments are unsafe for a variety of reasons. The issue is not just flooding, the issue
fire,
is egress and fire and all those sorts of things. So the situation now is that these apartments, because they're illegal, it is basically, the city has tried, tried to create a pilot program to address the illegal conditions, but part of the problem is it's difficult for them to invest in repairs in apartments that are just inherently illegal. So the main policy tool the city has to respond to the situation right now is vacate orders. So they could theoretically send in inspectors, push the families out, but what you would be doing is just displacing 100,000 people at that point, and that's not a realistic thing to do in a city that doesn't have, you know, housing available for folks. So what this will allow, again, is the city will put some, they will have put significant capital resources in, they will begin working with landlords, and they will figure out what is necessary to make these apartments safe. You know, I think that if somebody lives in a part of the city that this is not applicable to, I think it's appropriate for them to be advocating for their part of the city to be included. But I think what this will do is allow, you know, again, allow the city to start making apartments that are currently unsafe and illegal safe and legal. And I think that that's the core work that needs to be done. And it was going to take, you know, this is the kind of problem that's going to take multiple years to address in the best of circumstances. So I think, like I say, I had proposed to just do it in one fell swoop, but I think it's a significant, you know, very substantial step forward.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation about the recently adopted state budget and what it means for housing in New York with our guest, State Senator Brian Kavanaugh, a Manhattan Democrat who chairs the Senate's Housing, Construction, and Community Development Committee.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Resorts World New York. With over 1 million square feet of space to play, relax, and celebrate, Resorts World New York City hosts more than 5 million visitors a year. That makes Resorts World a significant social and economic partner for local businesses and residents alike. Through its operations and outreach programs, Resorts World has generated more than $4 billion for the state educational system and 1,400 jobs for the people of Queens. More information at rwnewyork.com.
For listeners just joining us, we're continuing our conversation about the recently adopted state budget with State Senator Brian Kavanaugh, a Manhattan Democrat who chairs the Senate's Housing, Construction, and Community Development Committee. Before the break, we were discussing the proposals in the budget that are designed to increase the housing stock in New York with a focus on building new affordable housing options for New Yorkers. Well, turning to the other side of the coin, the tenant protection part of the conversation, speaking with Max Politics, State Senator Julia Salazar described what's in the budget as one of the most substantial expansion of tenant rights in the state in at least 50 years. And she matters because she's the sponsor of the so-called good cause eviction protection legislation. What is it about what was included in the budget that is so substantial when it comes to tenants?
I think my great friend Senator Salazar is competing for that award with the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act of 2019, which greatly strengthened the laws protecting rent-stabilized tenants, but also added eviction protections and many other protections around the state, including 180,000 households in manufactured and mobile home parks who were not previously covered, who are covered by that bill. So, you know, it's...
You don't sound offensive.
major legislation. I hope my wonderful colleague, Senator Salazar, is listening. But yeah, this is a very significant expansion. Good cause eviction protections are now available for, you know, a very large number of tenants. I don't think there's any precise figure because it's hard. There isn't the data. You know, there are exemptions in the bill, including exemptions for small landlords who are defined as people who own 10 or fewer units anywhere in the state, and co-ops and condos and other things. So I don't think anybody has any reliable data to figure out exactly how many people we covered, but it's probably on the order of several hundred thousand apartments housing, you know, perhaps a million or so people.
And potentially more as communities opt into this?
Well, that's the thing. That's the initial number because it covers New York City, but it basically allows any locale, any village, town, or city in the state can opt into this. So over time, I think you'll see a great many more people covered. And it is a very major change. And, you know, it is not to, again, Senator Salazar and I are good friends who work very closely together, including on this bill. But it's a significant achievement in that it's expanding coverage to market to previously tenants that were entirely subject to the whims of the free market. It covers, it provides, it, you know, it stands for the radical proposition that you can't be evicted from your home for no good reason. If your landlord wants to put you out, they need a reason. Not paying your rent could be a reason. You know, damaging the apartment could be a reason. But the mere fact that your lease has expired and they'd like to rent it to another tenant instead of you no longer counts as a reason for eviction. So it's a significant achievement. And I think over time, it is something we'll probably be working on to strengthen over time. But it's a very big step forward. And Senator Salazar, who's been working on this since 2019, as I have, you know, deserves a lot of credit for pushing it over the finish line.
Well, what do you see as the challenges for implementing this law? Because right off the top of my head, I think about the eligibility requirements, because as you just described, there are a variety of carve-outs. But what do you see as the keys to enforcement to ensure this is a meaningful protection?
Right. This went into effect immediately upon the governor's signature in New York City. And so we're already engaged in a process of ensuring that people are aware. The city government in the past has done quite substantial public service advertising and announcements to make clear when there are rights available. Like they passed some new laws about harassment, tenant harassment recently, and you see subway posters and, you know, other public places telling people that you may have these rights. In this case, the effort is going to be to educate both property owners and tenants that they have a new process and there are new standards. And I think that the property owner groups are certainly going to be reaching out to their constituencies. But we will be, and I think legislators at the city and state level will also be notifying people. So the short-term need is to let people know in New York City that these rights are available. And HCR, the state housing agency, has already put out a lot of guidance. They think they published it on Friday that indicates fills in some of the blanks. There were, for example, exemptions for people whose rent is very high. HCR has now put out standards just to put those numbers out there. So I think that the state agency, the city, will all play a role in, and legislators themselves in our own communication with our constituents will play a role in actively letting people know that the rules are out there. I assume there'll be some litigation around the meaning of some of these terms.
It sounds like a safe bet.
Yes, but having said that, I think in California, the experience was when they did good cause eviction went into effect. Litigation seems to have declined in some localities where it went into effect. So I think we're gonna have an ongoing process. But again, this is a very positive step for lots of tenants will be protected. I and many others would like to see more tenants protected over time. But in the meantime, you know, we're excited about getting it on the books and getting it implemented. And yes, as you note, any village or town or city can opt in by a simple act of their local governing body. And some of those organizing campaigns are already underway. And anybody listening who would like to see these protections should be contacting their local government or perhaps tenant organizations in their community.
The state funds housing legal services, and in this budget, there's $40 million for the Homeowner Protection Program. I'm curious if there was additional investment made in legal services for tenants, given the changing nature of the renter landscape.
Yeah, we've been ramping that up. A few years ago, we carved $25 million out of the Emergency Rental Assistance Program funds for that purpose, and we've been ratcheting that up. This is a big priority of the legislature. So this year's budget contains $50 million of direct state support for organizations that represent tenants throughout the state. And it's $40 million of that is earmarked for outside of New York City.
Well, lastly, you brought up the 2019 rent reforms that you helped spearhead. In the conversation around housing in this year's budget, there was a concerted effort from landlord and property owners to scale back some of those 2019 laws, or at least maybe more charitably update them. What do you think emerged from this budget deal that impacts those 2019 protections? And do you have any concerns that they've been weakened?
I think less charitably, some of us would say that some property owner organizations were trying to gut those laws largely failed. There are changes to the rent stabilization laws that the only changes affect the provisions regarding the individual apartment improvement provisions, which permit landlords to raise the rent to cover the cost of apartment improvements. Again, individual apartment improvements, there are separate provisions for major capital improvements to the building. And what we did is increased the amount of money that one can spend on a on an individual apartment improvement to reflect increased costs in some sense, that the $15,000 cap that was in the current law was too low. So we raised that to $30,000, which is about a two-thirds increase in, you know, in inflation-adjusted dollars, because the $15,000 of 2019 would be about, would have been about $18,000 if you just account for inflation. And then in addition, we created a separate tier for the rare circumstances where $30,000 may not be enough for the individual apartment improvement, and that is for either apartments that have been been vacant for 2 years since April 1st, 2022, or for apartments that where they are coming off a continuous tenancy of 25 years or more. In that circumstances, with the approval of the state housing agency, the landlord might be able to spend as much as $50,000. So those are some provisions that some of the tenant organizations had objected to. They will moderately increase upward pressure on rents in some communities, but critically, they're unlikely to affect the tenancy of any tenant while they're occupying the apartment. These are changes that typically happen only when the apartment is vacant. And again, we kept the core of the reforms of HSTPA in place. Before the HSTPA in 2019, you could spend a very modest amount of money. You get giant increases through IAIs and through other provisions and deregulate the units entirely. So none of that, we're not going back to the bad old days before 2019 for tenants. But we did make some modest changes that should allow landlords to spend a bit more money and get and recoup it in rents in future from future tenants.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator Brian Kavanaugh. He is a Manhattan Democrat who chairs the Senate's Housing, Construction, and Community Development Committee. Senator, thanks for visiting us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a statewide union of nearly 700,000 professionals in education and healthcare.